Good day, my friends, and welcome to the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast. Today's show is brought to you by Diadora, the brand made legendary by Bjorn Borg and currently worn by world number 25, Jan Lennard Struff, world number 42, Martina Trevisan. See them at Diadora.com and use my code APPROVED in all caps at HollibertSports.com for 15% off of all Diadora performance tennis shoes. It's with great pleasure to announce that ScopeSports.io is the official fan club platform of the podcast. With Scope Fan Clubs, you can access premium behind-the-scenes content, chat with the athletes, and put yourself in play for special exclusive giveaways. These guys are on the move and getting ready to announce more and more players on their platform. See them at ScopeSports.io to see what they are all about. He is the tennis and basketball writer for Defector. He, like me, just left the desert where he covered the BNP Paribas Open, and we just went through all of the hot-button topics of the day in a fast and furious two-setter. Gary Nathan is today's guest, and this is the Sunshine Double Special. Now, hang on a second. You got back from the desert Monday? Are you in Brooklyn?
Yeah, I'm back in Brooklyn. I got back Monday night, but I was there for pretty much the whole second week of the tournament. But you're already in Miami.
Yeah, man. Come on. Listen. Listen, if you're going to be the fifth Grand Slam, you got to be at the Sunshine Double. Where are you in Brooklyn?
I live in Park Slope now.
What train do you take into the city?
I'm right next to Barclay, so I can get pretty much anything I want. Oh, wow. Which is very convenient.
You're right in the mix. For our listeners, gentlemen, you hear is the writer extraordinaire from Defector. He was formerly at Deadspin until Deadspin completely imploded. That is Gary Nathan. Gary, it was great to see you in the desert. I trust you got back safe and sound. You look good. Did you indeed do that, or did you have a bumpy flight?
Honestly, it was all right. Yeah, I spent the last half day I had there just getting the last good bite to eat, do a little vintage shopping, get a day shake, and then pop out of there. So,
my man, you're like, that's like a real hipster. You went to vintage stores, you got a date shake. What did you eat? Just tell us, what did you eat on your way out of town?
Honestly, we were very, very loyal to this kind of hippie place called Luscious Lorraine's. We went there almost every day, and highly recommend for anyone who has been eating a lot of stadium food and just wants some roughage and a good smoothie. It's a good spot.
Luscious Lorraine's. All right, listen, as you know, we do a five-set format. Because this is going to be a current events-ish show, we're gonna try a little bit of a truncated, different sort of take. But let's start it. The first set, this is the off-the-court report. Listen, you just wrote a big story for Nat Geo about, do I have this right, about mushrooms that are textiles?
That's correct.
That you make clothes out of?
That's right. That's right. So it's part of a larger package about kind of interesting future applications of fungi. Then the piece I was working on was like, how are they going to be useful in fashion, more or less? It was a really fun report to work on. There's some companies that are basically making leather out of fungi, and that's was the main focus of the piece.
How does one get this kind of a gig? I just got to know.
Yeah. So, I mean, fungi has been a big interest of mine since I was little, actually. I remember in second grade, we had an assignment to draw a picture book about a topic we were interested in. And that's what I chose for some reason. So it's been kind of an abiding interest my whole life, but I haven't written about it professionally that much until my buddy, who's a editor at Nat Geo, tapped me and said he wanted help with this package of stories. So that's how it came together.
Just to backtrack for a second, they're making leather, a leather-ish product.
That's right.
What do they call it?
They call it Reishi.
Reishi. You spell that?
R-E-I-S-H-I. That's kind of the proprietary name by one of these companies. You get to kind of make leather to spec. So you don't have to rely on kind of the randomness that comes with, obviously, cows varying from cow to cow, and it's a very interesting process.
Let's move into the second set. This is the On the Court report. We're gonna go hard in the paint here. This might be the whole show, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
First of all, Simona Halep lost to Paula Badoza yesterday. Miami tournament is on. Your impressions of the Halep reemergence, re-entrance into the orbit of matriculating pro tennis player.
Yeah, we could call it a reinstatement. Maybe I think it's important to notice, as you know, Caroline Wozniacki did, that she's not cleared. It's her sentence was reduced to 9 months. So, you know, backdating that, that's why she was clear to play. Obviously, it's an interesting conversation to be had about whether those players should be getting wild cards. I totally get it from the tournament's perspective. You want a big splashy name. You want to sell tickets, get people in seats. But the other side of things, I'm personally just excited to see what level she still has and whether she can hang with the new big players on the WTA.
To be clear, that it's when they say we did nothing wrong, it's just a cover up. It's not it's right. It's a cover up.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be very interested to know the details of what went down there. Obviously, the story that they present in court is one thing. I don't know how many contaminated MCT supplements are going around from the factory, but the story seemed to work. So
Aryna Sabalenka's boyfriend, who played pro hockey for many, many years, and was actually made it to the NHL, played for the Pittsburgh Penguins, launched himself off of a balcony in Miami a couple nights ago at 12:39 a.m. Sabalenka the next day has gone to practice. She says she's not doing press. She's playing the tournament. She actually plays Badoza first round. Your impressions of this story?
Obviously, extremely tragic. Official Miami-Dade Police Department statement has described it as an apparent suicide. No foul play is suspected. Hard to make sense of how she could be on the practice court just a couple hours after that. But I guess we'll see if any public statement is forthcoming.
What, generally speaking, is the thought amongst journalists when something like this happens? Wouldn't it be fair to say that calling a moratorium on press and then continuing to play strikes like super odd?
Yes, I think it's worth looking at both kind of the human element and the journalistic element here. Obviously, at a human level, you want to give someone just space to grieve however they see fit. But as journalists, our duty is definitely to understand kind of the dynamics of what's happening. And I think anyone would look at this situation and be very, very curious to know why she's still playing the tournament. So we'll see what kind of explanation we get as the week develops.
To that point, you know, I've just been told by somebody way on the inside that the boyfriend was no longer the boyfriend. Sabalenka was in Indian Wells with another gentleman. She flew private with Dimitrov with that other gentleman to Miami after leaving the desert. Mm-hmm. And it appears that the ex came to Miami to try to sort it out with her, and what happened. I guess more to come on that, but for people just to say that she deserves to do whatever she wants, that's not really how it works with public figures, is it?
No, I think that's a bit of a kind of modern phenomenon where, you know, it's still within our right to kind of understand what's going on. So
the Saudi incursion into the sport is in full effect. We know that there are heavy duty meetings going on probably as we speak. It's 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning here, 10 a.m. Eastern time. We know that the majors are here trying to get aligned in an effort to respond to this Saudi proposal. And Lou Scher just went on record with John Wertheim of discussing what that would look like. It appears that what's going to happen is the 500s and the 250s are going to be ousted from this deal. Can you add anything to this, Gary?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be kind of tragic for the tour in some ways. But it was definitely surreal to be on the ground in Indian Wells and to feel kind of the PIF presence everywhere I looked. It's starting small. They got that little tent and they got the courtside branding everywhere. But we know that's only just the beginning. And I could see this slowly creeping and being a huger part of the sport within a year.
By the way, totally odd to see the branding in Indian Wells. I mean, yeah, they came up hard. The giant sabers and the Arabic writing, the crest of the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, was large and in charge there, as well as they hired some sort of, you know, tennis influencers to create some content that was, you know, budget to say the least. Any further kind of observations you had?
Yeah, I was on the ground long enough that I checked out the tent a couple times. And they were running ad spots during the matches too. I don't know if you caught those, but they were kind of surreal and very stilted. So you wonder if they're going to be able to massage their messaging a little bit as this becomes more of a thing.
Yeah. 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 They seem like they just kind of are, it reminds me of the Martin Bashir, Michael Jackson documentary that was, you know, when Michael Jackson walked into a shop in the Caesar Palace shops in Vegas and goes, I want this. 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 You know, that's kind of how it feels like. They doesn't seem like they really have a plan other than they're just buying it all up.
Yeah. I mean, I think tennis saw what happened to golf and they decided it's less painful to just roll over. And that's what we're seeing now.
Did you feel like that sort of cast an odd pall on the entire time you were there?
For me, yes. With me and my colleague who were there, we were very conscious of it. And we're trying to feel out to what extent it would color our experience. I'm curious about the average fan, you know, whether they pick up on that, whether they're politically sensitive enough to really have a take there. One thing I thought was very funny is that when we were leaving the PIF booth, there was a survey asking fans if they were aware of Saudi involvement in tennis and then how they felt about it. So, you know, not that I think public opinion is going to really shape the outcome one way or another, but it might change their approach, the way they come into the sport.
The tournament started with Rafa pulling out, Rybakina pulling out, the weather odd and cold.
Yeah, bizarre.
Your impressions of the tournament on the court, in the stadiums?
I caught a lot of good tennis. That said, probably sat through 7 or 8 hours of delays cumulatively between 3 days of rain and then thousands of bees on the court during Alcaraz-Zverev. So a surreal couple of days in just desert phenomena. But once the tennis actually got going, I thought it's pretty high quality across the board.
You know, Rybakina has pulled out of 10 tournaments in some way over the calendar year from a week ago till, you know, from Indian Wells to Indian Wells, 2023 to 2024. She pulled out of 10 tournaments. What say you?
This last one was a little sudden, right? So it was the walkover in Dubai, and then right from there, no Indian Wells either. I guess citing GI illness. She's a kind of interesting case because the level she's shown even this year is very, very high. Remember, she absolutely smoked Sabalenka at the beginning of the year, but we just haven't seen enough of her. I don't know really what's going on behind the scenes medically, but there's definitely some kind of inconsistency there with the health.
The controversial coach adds to the palace intrigue, I would add.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
The Joker left the tournament oddly. He lost to world 123 Luca Nardi. He kind of bitched on the court about, you know, something that he probably wouldn't normally bitch about.
Yeah, that was weird.
Nardi played a ball kind of funny that he thought was out, but it was in. There's obviously no line calling, and he got pissed at Nardi. He said something after the match. Then he left it. He said he wasn't playing Miami. He was hanging out at, Zinyara. Then he was at courtside at the Lakers game. Now he's actually here in Miami. He was at the Lacoste.
I saw that.
Yeah, he was at his Lacoste party last night. We missed him by a few minutes. I need to go say hi to a few people there. What are you hearing in the media center about Novak?
Let's see. His official statement is kind of funny. At this stage of my career, I'm balancing my private and professional schedule. So make what you will of that.
He could have said he was just hurt.
Yeah.
He chose not to.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear now. He's been prioritizing the slams for a couple of years now. I definitely thought the moment in the Nardi match was a little nasty. The kid is just enjoying the best moment of the career, and you're kind of bringing up something irrelevant that you're mad about from a set that you won anyway. So it didn't really affect the outcome of the match one way or another. Whether I think he has lost a step, I think people have a very short-term memory about this stuff. This guy was dominant last season. Sure, he hasn't won. Yeah.
Let me just stop you. People that think that he's just gotten old after killing everybody all year last year, that's specious, to say the least. Yeah.
Yeah, it's truly off base to go down that road. He just won ATP Finals, Paris, US Open, Cincinnati, barely lost Wimbledon, won the French. So, like, what are we talking about here? If you want to say that he's lost a step relative to his own top level, then yeah, that's probably been true for a few years now. But I still think the gap between him and the rest of the tour is pretty large. It's narrowed only for Alcaraz and Sinner, but he's still beating the rest of the field pretty handily.
Something's going on with Novak. I guess we're going to see what the clay court season brings. I've heard something to the fact that he wants to try to make a run at that gold medal heavy, and he's not going to play Wimbledon and just stay on the clay.
That would be fascinating.
I agree. To not play Wimbledon is that's different.
Especially the way it ended last year. That one's kind of hard for me to believe, but we'll see.
Hey man, let's see what happens there.
Yeah,
I like my sources on a lot of this stuff. you know, one of the great moments of the tournament was seeing Maria Sakkari on this honeymoon with David Witt, crush grooving the tournament, got all the way to the final and competed well. Your thoughts on the Sakkari reemergence?
I was really relieved to see her get a good result. Watched her a ton this week, probably the player I watched the most. And I was a little skeptical whether she was cut out to compete with kind of this big three that's emerging on the WTA. I thought she was more on that Coco tier. I really enjoyed the semifinal those two played, and the quote she's been giving about David Witt, I think, speak very well of him. She's talked about being kind of like a bundle of nerves, but he's this very chill guy who helps her kind of cool down and stay focused. And under pressure, under some really disappointing circumstances in the semifinal, I think she gave up three match points in the second set. She still hung on. And that's not necessarily the kind of situation she would have thrived in earlier in her career.
David Witt's got her humming. You know, the women's semis was a dead ticket. Stadium 2, second week, was a dead ticket. Your impressions on the dead ticket situation?
I think they're clearly having some issues with pricing these tickets, because we had some really quality matches that were just sparsely attended. On a production standpoint too, during the women's first semi, the fact that you could hear the band playing on the grounds from inside the stadium, and the fact that I saw both players individually both noticing the music and being kind of weirded out by it, that just felt kind of cheap for an event of this magnitude.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, you can't be having that. I mean, you got the world number one on the court. I think they owe them a little more respect. That was just odd. And then the second semi obviously delayed for 2.5 hours. So the cool part was whoever hung around got to come all the way courtside. So that was fun.
Yeah, we got to definitely, we were in Catbird for a lot of this, which was kind of nice. Marta Kostyuk, no one's really spoken about. I feel like we need to talk a little bit about Marta Kostyuk. We need to talk about Iga Swiatek. Let's start with Marta Kostyuk. She's really played very good tennis. It seems like she's right there.
Yeah, I think the year started, you know, wonderfully for her with that quarterfinal result in Melbourne. That was a very grimy, grueling match, if I remember correctly, kind of a tough watch, neck and neck with Coco. So that was definitely a good start. And then this is another huge result for her, following up San Diego, where she was in the final too. So she's only 21. We're about to see her probably just as a staple in the top 15. So I'm looking forward to see what else she can do this season.
And how about Iga? What do you say about Iga?
She's just on another level. I think we saw that was very clear anyone she came across this week, it was just existing on a completely different plane from her. She lost 21 games in six matches.
She just throttled everybody, huh?
The final looked interesting for maybe 20 minutes, and then she just dialed in and it was over. She won eight games in a row. Barely broke a sweat in the desert. So
best thing you ate at the tournament?
At the tournament,
I turned you on to that tacos. You didn't like that? Oh, you had a burrito. You had a burrito.
Later in the tournament, I started getting there for the ceviche, and that was surprisingly good. They had a mango, passion fruit, avocado, shrimp ceviche with some black garlic and chili oil on it.
And that was Puesta, correct?
Yeah.
Puesta. I don't know much about them. That was good. A lot of people were talking about the pizza. They love the pizza.
That and the Moto pizza were probably the two standouts to me.
Carly Thomas Alcaraz, Carlos Alcaraz, and Jannik Sinner went head to head, and then Carlos, he beat Jannik Sinner in three, and then he came back and handled Medvedev in sort of a demonstrative fashion, I kind of felt.
I think that's accurate. Obviously, the Sinner matchup is always popcorn. That second set had at least like a 30-minute passage of just insane level. And then Sinner took a dive early in the third and was kind of feeling his wrist and elbow a little bit after that, and described it in press after. He said he couldn't serve as well after that fall. So I think that definitely affected the quality of that match in the tail end. But, you know, it's a delight anytime those two come across each other. Medvedev, I think we always talk about how he's this tactical genius, but I think he really needs to come up with something different if he wants to beat these two dudes. He described it in the second set as just running out of solutions. He said Carlos's ball is the only one that really powers through these slow conditions. He said, you know, Tommy Paul Korda would be serving at him 135, and then by the time the ball got to him, it'd be totally manageable. But Carlos's ball was just fast start to finish. So he brings kind of a different power out there, and now he's the back-to-back champion.
Final thoughts on the program, the Indian Wells, BNP. It's interesting too. BNP Paribas really took a backseat to the PIF. Like, it felt like the PIF to me was the title sponsor of the event.
Yeah, I think we are cued to be paying attention to this stuff. It's just going to be hard for any of these other sponsors to keep up with the Saudi pocketbook. So, yeah,
right.
I think it's just a matter of time before this branding is over absolutely everything in tennis. So it feels very odd to be kind of on the precipice of that the way we were this week. I believe this was the first tournament where we had the courtside branding even. So it's just the beginning.
Last thoughts on Miami, like what happens here? Listen, these tournaments don't disappoint, but they're 14 days, and yeah, there's way less matches in the days. Like, the schedule today is a banger, but it's less matches than we're normally used to seeing.
Yeah, I don't think the players generally like it either. I think these things just expand, and then they're just back to back to back. And it's, if you're going deep in these tournaments, it's just like, where do you have a moment to breathe? So yeah, you get the sparser schedules and you get kind of the more demanding travel on the players. And it's kind of, I don't know. It's, I understand why the tournaments want to kind of unfold them into bigger things, but have more tickets to sell, but it seems tough in other senses.
Oh, what are you writing about in the Defector?
We just wrapped up our Indian Wells coverage. I'm probably going to dial back in on NBA now. My Knicks are doing pretty well, so that's next on the docket.
And Nat Geo, is it called just Mushrooms? What's the edition?
Yeah, it's in the April issue, so you'll see it. It's part of a big package in there.
Big accomplishment. I think that's pretty cool. I may actually have to get one and have you sign it for me. Mushrooms.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, I enjoyed this straight setter. Gary Nathan, two sets.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think we hit everything I had, so.
Where do I see you next? I'm in New York next week. Are you not coming down here, are you?
No, I don't think I'm going to come down this year. I was there last year. I think I might catch you next during the clay swing. I'm going to try to make it out to Rome. So maybe I'll see you there.
No Academy has that. All right, Gary Nathan, this was a pleasure. See you probably next week in New York City at some juncture. You are released. Huge thank you to Geary Nathan. Thank you to Diodora. Use my code APPROVED in all caps at HollenbergSports.com for 15% off of all Diodora performance tennis shoes. Scopesports.io is the official fan club platform of the podcast. See them at Scopesports.io. Megan Fernandez edited the show. Our music is by Brian Senti. We'll be back next time with more of the most interesting voices in the sport. Until then, I'm Craig Shapiro, and you are released.